Welcome to Gima's Tales for Children. This week's show is sponsored by Anne McLean of Blue Pacific Realty. Thank you, Anne, for supporting our work at KCIW. It is because of sponsors like Anne and Blue Pacific Realty and listeners like you that Curry Coast Community Radio can continue to provide quality programming to our area. Welcome to Gima's Tales for Children. Each week we visit a different part of the world to hear stories, legends, and myths. Some of these stories are so old that the origin has been lost in time. Some are new, and some are timeless. Join us as we travel across our own great country to the eastern seaboard. The United States is divided into six regions. New England, the Mid-Atlantic, and the South all comprise the eastern seaboard and include 23 states, or nearly half of the total states in the Union. This is where settlers first made their homes and where our early culture began. The Revolutionary War was fought here. It is also here that most of the legends and myths that have endured began. Paul Bunyan, Johnny Appleseed, Rip Van Winkle, and the Witches of Salem, not to mention Briar Rabbit and all of his friends to the south. For further information about the Eastern Seaboard for children on the internet, I suggest www.kids.nationalgeographic.com. The first story today is from New York and is kind of spooky. Some say it is true, and I'll leave it up to you to decide when you finish hearing all about Auntie Greenleaf and the White Deer. Auntie Greenleaf was a scrawny old woman with a wild thatch of gray hair and a crooked nose. She lived in a hut surrounded by pines just outside Brookhaven, and she sold herbal remedies to the folks in town. Mostly people avoided her, except when someone got sick, because it was said that Auntie Greenleaf was a witch. Her home remedies worked too well to be natural. Folks figured she had to have help from the devil or one of his familiars. There were many stories whispered in Brookhaven about Auntie Greenleaf. People said she had hexed a farmer's pigs once after he spoke rudely to her, so that they all died, one right after another. One prominent citizen dreamed of Auntie Greenleaf, and the next morning her daughter fell ill with a fever and nearly died. It was also rumored that Auntie Greenleaf and her witch friends crossed the Atlantic in an eggshell and frolicked with the witches in England. Then they put a spell on the eggshell so that it brought them back home before sunrise. In the early fall, folks in town began talking about a large, pure white deer that was seen roaming the woods near Brookhaven at night. Several hunting parties were gathered to go after the large animal, but it seemed to be impervious to bullets, and folks began saying it was a phantom deer. Around about that time, several women in the town began having trouble with their churning, and a number of cows and pigs began to sicken and die. Folks blamed the incident on the phantom deer, though each of the people afflicted with the trouble had crossed Auntie Greenleaf at some point in the last month. The men of Brookhaven got up a hunting party to chase down the animal. They were gone all day and well into the night. Finally, they spotted the white deer. It was the largest deer any of them had ever seen and was fast, too. They couldn't keep up with it. The men got several good shots in and swore that at least one of them hit the deer, but it just kept running. They returned home empty-handed. One local farmer became obsessed with the white deer. Every moment he could spare from his work, the farmer would take his gun and go hunting in the woods around town. He saw the white deer several times, but his shots always seemed to go astray. Finally, he decided the white deer must be a witch of some sort. The farmer melted silver to make bullets, and then he took his gun and went out hunting the white deer. He managed to make 3 shots with his silver bullets, and the white deer actually stumbled as if one of the shots had hit it. Then it jerked upright and ran away. He tracked it almost to Auntie Greenleaf's hut, but then he lost it in the dark somehow, which was mighty strange, seeing as the deer was pure white. The next day, the farmer learned that Auntie Greenleaf was ill. From the moment she took to her bed, the local farm animals stopped dying, and the families who were having trouble with their churning were back to normal. Less than a week later, Auntie Greenleaf died, and the doctor who cared for her told the minister he found 3 silver bullets in her spine. After the death of Auntie Greenleaf, the phantom white deer was never heard of or seen again in Brookhaven. Staying in New York, let's go back even farther in time, to before the first Europeans arrived here. The Seneca tribe have a legend which tells a story about a beautiful young girl and has a lot to do with what visitors to Niagara will see today. Here is The Maiden of the Mist. Once upon a time, there lived a young girl called Lelawala, daughter of Chief Eagle Eye of the Seneca people. When she was still very young, Lelawala married, but alas, her husband died and the poor girl could not find her way through her sorrow. One day she stepped into her canoe and paddled along the Niagara River. Without thinking, she paddled into the swift current. Soon the rough waves caught her canoe and hurtled her into the falls. Down she and her canoe tumbled over those roaring falls. As she fell, Hano, the god of thunder and lightning, who lived beneath the falls, caught her in his arms and carried her to his home. This was a quiet cave, nestled behind the falls, safe from the raging waters. There, Hano and his sons tended to the sad girl, healing her wounds. As time passed, even her heart began to heal. Lelawala and one of Hano's sons fell in love, and she was happy again. Still, she never forgot her people. One day, a mighty serpent came down the river to the place where the people lived and began to poison the waters. Their crops began to die, and soon the people were dying as well. Lelawala saw that the serpent would destroy all her people. She ran to Hano. "Please," she begged, "I must go to my people to warn them of the dangers of the serpent. Can you take me there?" Hano lifted the girl through the falls and set her down among her people, where she appeared as a great drifting mist. She called out to her people, "Please, it is your daughter, and you must move away from this place." The people stepped closer and stared, and soon they began to see the shape of Lelawala rising out of the mist. "There is a serpent that is destroying your life," she said, "poisoning your waters, destroying your land. You must move upriver to Buffalo Creek." "It is our daughter," the people said. "We must listen." And at once they began to pack their canoes with all the belongings they would need to settle a new place. Hano carried Lelawala back to her husband and her home under the falls. The next day, when the serpent returned to the village to eat those who had died from his poison, he was enraged to find that the village was gone. He hissed with fury and turned upstream to follow them. But when Hano heard the hiss, he rose up through the mists. He followed the serpent upstream, and before they reached the people, Hano threw down a great thunderbolt. The people who had landed at Buffalo Creek heard that loud crack of thunder. They turned and watched in astonishment as a great blast of lightning ripped into the monster. The creature thrashed, whipping its tail against the water, shrieking in distress, and then it was still. Its giant body began to float downstream, and it lodged just above the cataract. There it created a huge semicircle that deflected great amounts of water into the falls just above the home of the gods. Horrified, Hano swept in through the falls and did his best to stop the pouring water. Alas, he was too late. Nothing could stop that water, and when he saw that soon his home would be destroyed, he called for his sons and Lelawala to come away. "We must leave this place," he cried, and quickly they were there beside him. Together, they moved into the sky, and it was there that they found a new home. It is from this new home in the sky that Hano and his sons and the woman known as Maiden of the Mist watch over the people of Earth. Just as Hano once thundered beneath the water, now he thunders in the sky. The basin that was carved out of the creek by the serpent's body is known as the Horseshoe of Niagara Falls, and there the Seneca gathered to honor the gods and to thank them for their kindness. And even now, if you listen closely, you can hear the echo of Hano's voice in the mighty water of the falls. And if you look closely at the mist that drifts into the sky, you'll see the maiden who once walked upon the earth with her people. Maine is a state that borders Canada on our eastern border. and one of the great fictional characters that we still read about today was supposedly born there. Here is a very short but very tall story about the birth of Paul Bunyan. Now I hear tell that Paul Bunyan was born in Bangor, Maine. It took 5 giant storks to deliver Paul to his parents. His first bed was a lumber wagon pulled by a team of horses. His father had to drive the wagon up to the top of Maine and back whenever he wanted to rock the baby to sleep. As a newborn, Paul Bunyan could holler so loud that he scared all the fish out of the rivers and streams. All the local frogs started wearing earmuffs so they wouldn't have to go deaf when Paul screamed for his breakfast. His parents had to milk 2 dozen cows morning and night to keep his milk bottle full, and his mother had to feed him 10 barrels of porridge every 2 hours to keep his stomach from rumbling and knocking the house down. Within a week of his birth, Paul Bunyan could fit into his father's clothes. After 3 weeks, Paul rolled around so much during his nap that he destroyed 4 square miles of prime timberland. His parents were at their wits' end. They decided to build him a raft and floated it off the coast of Maine. When Paul turned over, it caused a 75-foot tidal wave in the Bay of Fundy. They had to send the British Navy over to Maine to wake him up. The sailors fired every cannon they had in the fleet for 7 hours straight before Paul Bunyan woke from his nap. When he stepped off the raft, Paul accidentally sank 4 warships, and he had to scramble around scooping sailors out of the water before they drowned. After this incident, Paul's parents decided the East was just too plumb small for him, and so the family moved to Minnesota. To the north of New York lies Vermont. There are many stories, legends from this area, and this one struck me as quite amusing. Here is First Things First. Well, the spring floods here in Vermont are mighty fierce, don't you know? One young farmer named Tom got trapped one year when the river started rising near his place. He watched the water creep up to his front porch and then through the front door, and then on up the steps until he and his wife were trapped in their upstairs bedroom. "Looks like we're going to have to get out on the roof, Mildred," he told his wife, who was knitting placidly by the bed as their chicken coop drifted away past the window with all the chickens squawking like there was no tomorrow. Mildred put down her knitting, grabbed the end of a rope attached to the side of the henhouse, and secured it to the shutter next to the window. Then she sat back down in her rocker, picked up her knitting, and said, "Whatever you think best, dear, or perhaps the bed will float." At that moment, Tom and Mildred heard voices shouting to them from outside the window, and up rode their next-door neighbors in their old boat. "All your cows are safe over at our place," called Fred. "They came running up our hill when the water started rising, and your horse just swam past us on the way here. We thought we should come and get you before your house floated away, too." "That's mighty nice of you," said Tom as the water came lapping in through the bedroom door. "We thought we'd have to spend the night on the roof, don't you know?" "Or float on over to your place on the bed," Mildred added, folding up her knitting, rescuing the cat from the top of the bedstead and handing both out the window to her neighbors. She climbed through after them and sat in the boat next to the neighbor's wife. Tom was halfway out the window himself when he was struck by a thought. "Golly, Mildred! We nearly left without Grandma's moonshine. How in heck are we going to celebrate our rescue without it?" So saying, he ducked back through the window and swam underwater all the way down to the cellar to fetch a couple of kegs of moonshine. Once the booze was safely in the boat, Tom climbed in after it with 4 mugs clutched in his hands. First things first, as everyone in the boat agreed. Tom poured the moonshine into the mugs and handed them round. Then he raised his mug and said, "To Fred and Mary, the best dang neighbors a feller ever had." Mildred echoed the toast and everyone drank to the rescuers as the rowboat bobbed merrily along the top of the roof. Fred felt called upon to respond. He riz up and stood on top of the bow of the boat. As he climbed up the bow, boats started rocking and pitching like a frisky kitten, and the cat fell overboard. Mary dove in after it and they both came up, yowling and sputtering. Fred, the neighbor, said, "Here's to Tom and Mildred," reaching out a hand to haul Mary back into the boat. As they drank the second toast, the rope holding the chicken coop broke and it floated downstream, hens squawking protests all the way. After everyone had been toasted 6 times, they decided the rescue had been properly celebrated for the moment. Fred picked up the oars again, unhooked the boat from the chimney, and rowed crookedly downstream, following the squawking chickens. They found the chicken coop stuck against a large pine tree. Tom tied the coop to the back of the boat while Mildred swarmed her way clear to the top of the tree to rescue the rooster. Then Fred rowed Tom and Mildred to safety while Mary poured them all another drink of Grandma's moonshine. It was as fine a rescue as ever was made, and the best save of the day was Grandma's moonshine, don't you know? These next three stories come from the southern states of the eastern seaboard and feature friends of Briar Rabbit. Briar is short for brother, by the way. There are so many cute stories about Briar Rabbit, but not as many about his friends. This first one is about a fox, a turtle, and a bullfrog. Here is Briar Fox Catches Old Man Terrapin. Well now, Briar Rabbit had made friends with Old Man Terrapin, a big turtle that lived in the pond near his house. Briar Rabbit and Old Man Terrapin liked to pull tricks on Briar Fox, and that rascally fellow got pretty mad about it. Since he couldn't catch Briar Rabbit no how, Briar Fox decided that he'd get even with Old Man Terrapin instead. He started walking beside the pond every day, hoping to find the turtle out of the water. One morning, as he was taking his daily stroll, Briar Fox saw Old Man Terrapin sitting right in the center of the road. The old turtle looked hot and bothered about something. He kept shaking his head back and forth, and he was panting like he was out of breath. "Howdy, Briar Terrapin," said Briar Fox, stopping beside the old turtle. "What's the matter with you?"
"I was a-strolling in the field beside my pond when the farmer came along and set it on fire," Old Man Terrapin gasped. "I had to run and run, but that old fire was faster than me, so I curled up in my shell while it passed right over me. My shell is hotter than the noonday sun, and I think I done singed my tail."
"Let me have a look," said Briar Fox. So Old Man Terrapin uncurled his tail and poked it out of his shell. Immediately, Briar Fox grabbed him by the tail and swung him right off the ground. "I got you now, Briar Terrapin," cried Briar Fox. "You ain't gonna bother me no more." Well, Old Man Terrapin begged and begged Briar Fox not to drown him. He'd rather go back into the fire in the field on account of he'd gotten kind of used to being burned. Briar Fox swung the poor old turtle back and forth by his tail, trying to decide what to do. Putting Old Man Terrapin into the fire was a tempting idea, but then he remembered how the old turtle had curled up into his shell, so the fire couldn't touch him. Briar Fox frowned. Fire was no good then. Briar Fox decided to drown Old Man Terrapin instead. He tucked the turtle under his arm and carried him down to the spring house by the pond.
"Please, oh, please don't drown me," Old Man Terrapin begged.
"I ain't making no promises," Briar Fox retorted. "You've played too many tricks on me, Briar Terrapin." Briar Fox thrust him into the water and began bouncing him up and down.
"Oh, I's drowning," shouted Old Man Terrapin when his head bounced out of the water. "Don't let go of my tail, Briar Fox, or I'll be drowned for sure."
"That's the idea, Briar Terrapin," Briar Fox yelled back and let go of his tail. Immediately, Old Man Terrapin splashed down and down into the water and thumped onto the mud at the bottom. Kerplickety-splat. That's when Briar Fox remembered that Old Man Terrapin lived in the pond, and there was never any fear of him drowning, no how. He could hear him laughing from the bottom of the pond.
"I dare you to come down here."
Briar Fox jumped up and down in fury. Old Man Terrapin had escaped him. From the other side of the pond, Briar Bullfrog called out, "Knee deep, knee deep." Briar Fox glared at the pond and then looked back at Briar Bullfrog. "It's only knee-deep?" he asked suspiciously. "Knee-deep, knee-deep," Briar Bullfrog said again. All the little frogs joined in the chorus then. "Better believe it, better believe it." Well, thought Briar Fox, if it was only knee-deep, then he'd have no trouble catching Old Man Terrapin.
Wade in,"
croaked Briar Bullfrog. "Knee-deep, knee-deep," agreed all the little frogs. Briar Fox didn't much like water, but he really wanted to catch Old Man Terrapin. He approached the edge of the pond cautiously. From underneath the water, Old Man Terrapin laughed at him, and his words bubbled up to Briar Fox.
"I dare you to come down here. I dare you to come down here."
Well, that did it. Briar Fox ran right up to the edge of the pond,
Leaning over, he looked into the water and saw another fox staring at him.
"That's your brother, that's your brother,"
Br'er Bullfrog told Br'er Fox. Br'er Fox was thrilled. He didn't know he had a brother. Now there were two foxes. Catching Old Man Terrapin would be a cinch. Br'er Fox leaned down to shake hands with his newfound brother and toppled right down into the steep water of the pond. All of the frogs laughed and laughed at the trick they had played on Br'er Fox, and Old Man Terrapin started swimming up from the bottom of the pond, his red eyes fixed on Br'er Fox's tail. Br'er Fox knew that the old turtle wanted to pull him down under that water and drown him, so he learned to swim mighty quick. With much splashing and squirming and kicking, Br'er Fox made it to the edge of the pond, where he jumped out and ran away as fast as he could, while Br'er Bullfrog laughed and the little frog shouted with glee. The last thing he heard as he rounded the corner was the voice of Old Man Terrapin calling,
"I dare you to come down here."
Br'er Fox never messed with Old Man Terrapin again. This next story features another one of Br'er Rabbit's friends who gets tricked by someone other than Br'er Rabbit. Here's a tale about Br'er Bear's house. Well now, out of all the animals that live in the woods, Br'er Bear had the biggest house. The house was warm and cozy on the inside, but it was also very crowded on account of Br'er Bear having him a plump wife and two plump young'uns named Simon and Susanna. The Bear family did most everything together. They'd eat together, and they'd wash together, and they'd catch fish together, and they'd play games together. They were real close. And at night, they all crowd together into their house and crawl into their giant bed to get some sleep. But they were all so plump that they could hardly fit on the big bed, and there was hardly room around the bed to walk without hitting the walls. So the family slept nose to nose to nose all night long, and they had to eat all their meals outside on the porch, because there was no room to eat inside the big warm house. Well now, one evening in late autumn, Br'er Bear and his family crowded into their warm house to get some shut-eye. They'd just settled down to sleep when someone came a-knocking on their front door. Bang, 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 went the door knocker. All four bears jumped in surprise when they heard the sound. Simon Bear bumped heads with Susanna Bear, who howled in pain and rolled over, clutching her head in her paws. Susanna Bear bumped into Mama Bear, who fell out of the far side of the bed with a shout of surprise. And Mama Bear, she landed on top of Br'er Bear, who just got out of the bed so he could see who was a-knocking on the door. It was all a big kerfluffle, with the whole family a-yelling and a-fussing, and the stranger a-bang-a-bang-a-banging on the door knocker.
"Who is it?" Br'er Bear finally howled through the keyhole. "Why are you a-knocking on my door so late at night?"
"It's Br'er Skunk," the stranger called through the door. "The nights are getting right cold out here with winter coming, so I'm looking for a job as a housekeeper. I thought you folks might need someone to help do chores around the place in exchange for a warm spot to sleep at night."
"A housekeeper?" roared Br'er Bear. "We ain't got no room for a housekeeper in this here house. We can barely turn around without bumping into one another as it is."
"That's why you need a housekeeper," Br'er Skunk cried through the door. "I'm very good at cleaning out a place. Why, after I get through with your house, there'll be so much space I could sleep each night in a cozy bed and eat all my meals inside."
Well, this was a tempting proposition. Mama Bear looked at Br'er Bear and Susanna Bear looked at Simon Bear. Imagine living in a house that was so empty they could bring their dinner inside and eat it without poking somebody in the eye.
"We should hire him, Pa," Simon said. "We could really use some more room in this house," added Susanna wistfully, rubbing her sore head with one paw.
So Br'er Bear invited Br'er Skunk to come into his big warm house to be the new housekeeper for the bear family. Br'er Skunk ambled inside and eyed all the plump bears, watching him eagerly as cold moonlight streamed through the open door. Then he turned round, lifted his black and white tail, and blasted the air of that cozy warm house with his very special scent. Br'er Bear and his family took one whiff of this terrible perfume, and they went a-running for the woods so fast that they didn't even stop to shut the door behind them. Once the big house was cleared of all those plump bears, Br'er Skunk had plenty of room to sleep each night in a cozy bed and eat all of his meals inside, just like he said.
And what happened to the bear family?
I don't know, but I think they might still be running, trying to get away from Briar Skunk's smell.
This story is the last one I'll tell from the South. It's all about Briar Lizard and Briar Frog, and it's called Why Lizards Can't Sit. Back in the old days, Briar Lizard was an awful lot like Briar Frog, meaning he could sit upright like a dog. Things were like this for quite a spell. Then one day, when they were walking down the road by their swamp, Briar Lizard and Briar Frog spotted some real nice pasture land with a great big pond that was on the far side of a great big fence. Oh, did that land look good! Looked like a great place for Briar Lizard to catch insects and other good food, and Briar Frog wanted to swim in that big old pool. But that fence was so high, Briar Frog could never have jumped over it, and Briar Lizard, well, his legs weren't suited for jumping high at all. Well, Briar Lizard and Briar Frog sat beside that tall fence with their bottoms on the ground and their front ends propped up, because Briar Lizard could still sit upright then, just like a dog, and they tried to figure out how to get through the fence. Suddenly, Briar Frog saw a narrow crack low to the ground.
"I'm going to squeeze through that crack over there," he croaked.
Briar Lizard said, "Well, Briar Frog, I don't know if you can make it or not, but I am willing to help you push you through."
And Briar Frog hopped over and pushed and squeezed and struggled and prayed his way through that tiny crack until he popped out onto the other side. Briar Lizard scurried over to the crack in the fence and he pushed and squeezed and struggled and cursed. Suddenly, a rail fell down and mashed him flat. After that, Briar Lizard couldn't sit upright no more, and he never did get through that fence to eat them insects neither.
Short and Twisted is our next and last story from Massachusetts about the Twistmouth family. A while back, there was a family I know of, a mother, a father, and several children. Four of them had mouths that were twisted into strange shapes. The mother's mouth twisted up, while the father's mouth twisted down. The sister's mouth twisted left, while the younger brother's twisted right. The eldest son John's mouth was perfectly normal. When John grew up, his parents sent him to college. He was the first person in his family to get a college education, and everyone was eager to hear what he had to say when he came home from his first vacation. Everyone sat up talking. When it came time to go to bed, Mother said, "Papa, I cannot find the candle snuffer. Will you blow out the candle in the sitting room?"
"Yes, I will," said the father.
He blew as hard as he could, but his mouth was twisted down so that when he blew, the air tickled his chin.
"Well now, Mama, I think you should blow out the candle," said he.
"Yes, I will," said she. She blew as hard as she could, but her mouth was twisted up so that when she blew, the air made her hair stand on end.
"You know, Mary," she said to her daughter, "I think perhaps you should blow out the candle."
"Yes, I will," said Mary.
She blew as hard as she could, but her mouth twisted to the left, so that when she blew, all the air rushed over her cheek.
"Dick, I think tonight you should blow out the candle," said Mary to her younger brother.
"Yes, I will," said Dick.
He took a deep breath and blew as hard as he could, but his mouth was twisted to the right, so that when he blew, all the air went into his right ear. Then Dick said,
"John, maybe you should blow out the candle."
"Yes, I will," said John.
He blew as hard as he could, and since his mouth was straight, the candle went right out. They all cheered. Patting John on the shoulder, the father said to his two younger children, "Well now, I hope you both learned how important it is to get a college education." So we've come to the end of our time together today. If you have a story you'd like to hear, please feel free to write me with your request. If you've written a children's story and would like to share it, let me know as well. You can email me at guima@kciw.org. That's guima@kciw.org. See you next week. Same time, same place, but very different stories. We'll be traveling to Romania. This is the country where gypsies lived. They have traveled over the entire world in their caravans, and to this day, you can find gypsies almost anywhere. Gypsies started the first circuses that we know of. They are the first acrobats and magicians, too. Stay safe, have fun, and let your imagination soar. This is Gima saying goodbye and happy reading.